Hi, this is James Barris. I hope you find this talk supports you in your practice. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button underneath my picture on Dharma Seed to do that. Your support is greatly appreciated.
I was just sitting and being part of the month-long retreat at Spirit Rock, and it's always a privilege and just so rewarding to support people in their practice and to just see how the Dharma works when you apply it and sincerely just try to bring mindfulness into the moment. It works. I'm never ceases to move me and amaze me just how putting in your time and bringing a kind awareness to the moment opens one up to goodness inside, heartful quality inside, and clarity to see things clearly. And it is a process. So those who've just come back from the retreat, I hope that you're really gentle with yourself and very patient if you're going through, as I said at the end of the retreat, mood swings or energy swings, or you're not as enlightened as you hope you'd be. But if you see things a bit more clearly, one of the good things about coming out of retreat with all your armoring down is you see all the beauty and goodness around you a lot more clearly, because there's not that armoring. And hopefully when you look in the mirror, you'll see that too, staring back at you. And you also see the craziness of this world as well. So it's important to be really gentle and kind and patient with whatever you do see. And I wanted to share something. I mentioned it on the retreat, so there's a few things that those who are sitting will recognize, but we're going into a different topic than I spoke of on the retreat. But I wanted to start first with something that I mentioned in one of my last talks about the Buddha's encouragements or instructions to keep in mind when one's practice is developing, particularly one of these five instructions. And this is in a story that is told about this new monk who was recently joining the Sangha, and he was with the Buddha, and just the two of them were alone, and this monk Magiya wanted to sit by himself and practice, and the Buddha said, "No, just keep me company here for a while." And Magiya asks him the proverbial three times, "No, please let me practice." And when he practices, he sees this beautiful mango grove, and he practices or tries to practice, and his mind is filled with thoughts of sense desire, ill will, and cruelty. The big three, that is the opposite of non-greed, non-hatred, and compassion. Cruelty is non-compassion. And he goes to the Buddha and he says, "It's amazing. I'm trying so sincerely, and my mind is filled with all of these things, and I can't believe it." And the Buddha said, "Oh yes, that happens when you're new or early on in your practice." And he gives him five supports for one's practice that you might just keep in mind, even if you've been practicing it for quite a while, it's good to remember these supports. And one of them is like-minded friends. And here we are together. There's something about practicing with others and knowing you're not alone in this, facing in the direction of greater clarity and kindness. A second is living with integrity, living with sila, not causing harm and being aligned with your values. The third is being careful, particularly around your speech, because it affects the mind so much. What comes out of your mouth affects your balance, your heart, your openness. And you know, you ever say something and afterwards you hear it reverberating in your head and you say, I can't believe I said that, or maybe you're a little bit sharp with somebody and it's keeps on spinning in your mind for some time. So he says, be careful with your speech and be skillful. Don't cause harm through your speech and say what's truthful and what's useful. And the fourth support that he says to Magia is to guard against unwholesome states. And when they arise, to know how to overcome them. And then he says, cultivating wholesome states, and when they arise, to maintain and strengthen them. Those are the four wise efforts. And then the fifth, which is what I want to focus on tonight, he says, if there's one thing to keep in mind in your practice, one ongoing reflection, remember impermanence. Remember that everything changes. Seeing deeply into the truth of impermanence, and in particular, seeing that you can't hold on to experience because it's always changing, and you don't have to be afraid of challenging experience, because that also will change. When you see that and see that you too are this process of change, it's a doorway to freedom. But it's more than just having the idea. You know, if I ask anyone here, do things change? Probably everyone will say, well, you've been practicing. So you'd be saying, yeah, I know things change. Oh, I've watched my mind, you know. But even outside in the street, if nobody's ever meditated and you say, do things change? Generally, most people will say, yeah, things do change. It's different than it used to be. But there's not a lived embodied experience of that for most people. And even if you've been practicing for some time, you might have the idea here, but the embodied lived experience while you're going through the hard stuff, or as the beautiful stuff is starting to fade, there can be this sense of, well, this isn't the way I'd run the universe. If I was doing in charge, I'd be doing a much better job than this. Why does this have to fade? Or, I didn't ask for this ache in my knee or this pain in my heart or whatever it is. So it's more and more getting it within your bones. I'm just thinking now as I'm talking, a teaching from Ajahn Chah, who says, first we hear the Dharma, we hear the teachings, then we understand the teachings, then we realize the teachings, realize the Dharma, and then finally we become the Dharma, where it's moved from being an intellectual or conceptual understanding to be in our bones, in our DNA, so to speak, in our cells, I should say. And that's where you're mostly living from. Of course, until you're fully enlightened, it's easy to get lost in just one moment. You know, I always say you press the right button and I can be back in the third grade. Well, why is that happening? Oh, I don't know. But gratefully, after all of these years, that's not where I live from. And you just put in your time and it seems to happen more and more that you have an embodied understanding of the teachings. But seeing deeply into this truth of impermanence on many levels is a doorway to liberation. This is from the Buddha in the Samyutta Nikaya. He says, the perceiving of impermanence, bhikkhus, practitioners, developed and frequently practiced, removes all sensual attachment, removes all attachment for material existence, removes all grasping for becoming, removes all ignorance, removes all and abolishes all conceit of I am. That means feeling that I'm separate from the rest of life. In a world of change, you see that there's nothing to hold on to, as Joseph Goldstein, my teacher and probably an inspiration for many of you, say. He says, trying to hold on to changing experience is like rope burn. As you're sliding down the rope and it hurts, because that's what's happening, holding on to the present. If you held on just to the present, you're in good shape. But if you're trying to hold on to the present as it is and trying to keep it here, you will get burned. This is dukkha. So seeing impermanence, really getting it, you're moving from the second noble truth of holding on attachment to the third noble truth of real freedom, which is the result of letting go of that which you can't hold on to. But like I say, it's not so easy, even when we know better. We don't like to accept that things change, especially we don't like to accept that they're out of our control. This is the big one. Have you noticed this? I recently had an experience where I had a difficult situation, or there was a situation that arose where things that I didn't want to happen happened in a surprise. Things that I didn't have a say about, but something changed in my role of a situation that wasn't up to me to say, and it was quite unexpected. You ever have that feeling you get news that you just say, oh, wait a minute, how did that happen? Wait a moment. And for all the practice that I've been doing, it was, whoa, how can that be? And it involved also just a change of my responsibility and the way I way I was participating in a particular project. and a change of identity. It was really humbling. I say every now and then, it's good to be humbled, not as a steady diet, but every now and then, just say, oh, I'm not in control here. And I went through a lot of feelings. I was upset, confused, didn't feel respected and all of that. And then at some point, fortunately, it wasn't too long, I said, whoa, okay, I've got a choice here. This is the way things are. I can fight it, or I can take it as practice. And fortunately, there was something in my, somewhere in there that said, better to go take it as a practice route, much better. And when I did that, I said, okay, what can I learn here? You know, how humbling it was to just see little Jamie from Queens saying, I don't like this. And instead say, okay, this is what's happening. Oh yeah, things change. I keep on hearing about that and saying it myself. But for a while, in that in-between time, there was a sense of groundlessness. And that's the experience that I'd like to explore a little bit, this in-between times when something happens, you get activated, and it's not in your control until at some point you say, okay, how can I work with this skillfully? And we get a chance to work with groundlessness a fair amount where we're that in that in-between period. And I wanted to share a couple of teachings on groundlessness. This is a word that is used a lot by Pema Chodron and her teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, who was an early teacher of mine. This is what Trungpa Rinpoche says, a famous quote. He says, life is like jumping out of a plane. The bad news is you're falling through the air. Nothing to hang on to. No parachute. The good news is there's no ground. So instead of thinking, splat, it's just around the corner, or it's just down there waiting for me, then you, when you really see there's no ground in this changing flow of experience, it's possible to just enjoy the freedom of not falling, but just being floating through life. This is Pema Chodron talking about groundlessness. It's not impermanence per se, or even knowing that we're going to die, that is the cause of our suffering, the Buddha taught. Rather, it's our resistance to the fundamental uncertainty of our situation. Our discomfort arises from all of our efforts to put ground under our feet, to realize our dream of constant okayness, which is an illusion. Oh, it's all okay. It is all okay, but to think in the way we usually like, oh, it's okay, it'll be fine, that's an illusion. When you really get it's okay how it is, that's a whole other level. But when we have resistance to the fundamental uncertainty of our situation, to realize that our dream of constant okayness is an illusion, we resist. When we resist change, it's called suffering. But when we can completely let go and not struggle against it, when we can embrace the groundlessness of our situation and relax into its dynamic quality, that's called enlightenment, or awakening to our true nature, to our fundamental goodness that's right inside. Another word for that is freedom, freedom from struggling against the ambiguity of being human and hoping that things won't change. So it's all about letting go and not having this idea that we're going to crash if we do, but to see that it's really workable. That's a word that Trungpa Rinpoche used to use, to see that it's all workable if we have the right relationship to change, and letting go and learning that it's safe to let go is the key. I want to share this quote. I read it on the retreat that I love, of Ajahn Sumedho, who was Ajahn Chah's Dharma heir, first Dharma heir, and Jack Kornfield's really big brother when he became a monk. Ajahn Sumedho took him under his wing, and Ajahn Sumedho established all the Ajahn Chah sanghas around the world. So this is what Ajahn Sumedho says: "The practice of letting go is very effective for minds obsessed by compulsive thinking. You simplify your meditation practice down to just two words, let go. Rather than try to develop this practice and then develop that and achieve this and go into that and understand this and read the suttas and study the Abhidhamma and then learn Pali and Sanskrit, then the Madhyamaka and the Prajnaparamita, getting ordinations in Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, writing books and becoming a world-renowned authority on Buddhism. Instead of becoming the world's expert on Buddhism and being invited to great international Buddhist conferences, just let go, let go, let go. I did nothing but this for about 2 years. Every time I tried to understand or figure things out, I'd say, let go, let go, until the desire would fade out. So I'm making it very simple for you to save you from getting caught in incredible amounts of suffering. There's nothing more sorrowful than having to attend international Buddhist conferences." Can we do that? Can we let go either of how we want things to be, or ideas about the future and what we hope will happen, or what we're worried will happen? That's just as much a cause of our suffering, worrying about the future. Can we let go and just see, this is just a mental fabrication I'm creating in my mind, especially around worry? My mom, who is no longer with us, was a big worrier. And she said she wasn't really putting in her time if she wasn't worrying, because she somehow thought, as many people do, it somehow keeps things at bay. Well, if I worry enough about it, you know, I'm kind of putting in my time. That's what she used to say. And she used to say, I said, "Mom, you don't have to worry all that much. Let's just see what happens." And she said, "No, if I don't have anything to worry about, that's when I really get worried. It was just so much of a habit in her. That's how she thought she could control life. You can probably hear the pain in that. In the later years, she started to understand and accept. It was really beautiful in those last years when she got it. So this idea of letting go of the control that you never had, Alan Watts wrote a beautiful book, and the title says it all, The Wisdom of Insecurity. The Wisdom of Insecurity, which is really a kind of relaxing into groundlessness, relaxing into the fact that I can't really control life. So what if I just learn to enjoy the ride instead of fighting it, instead of thinking that everything is either a win or a loss or a pass or fail test? What if I just learn to ride through life? My dear friend, I said this a few months ago, I have a good friend, Edward Lewis, who was one of the early key figures in Spirit Rock being developed. He was the project manager. He had been in real estate, and he really oversaw a lot of the early buildings on Spirit Rock, and was on the board for many years. And he turned 88 about 6 months or so ago. And he's in this group that meets, that I meet with, all, it's a peer group of really wonderful people. He lives in Thailand, and he joins by Zoom in Thailand. And on his 88th birthday, we said, hey, Edward, you've been practicing for 40 plus years now. Why don't you give a Dharma talk on what you've learned? So he gave this Dharma talk. It was a beautiful Dharma talk, but the one thing that I've taken with me and I've used since is, you know about all of this practice? Well, a week or so ago, I knocked over an expensive vase in my house. He has lovely things in his house. He's getting a bit frailer, and he was clumsy, and he knocked it over, and it shattered in smithereens. And he said, years ago, my reaction would have been, oh no. And when it happened, my reaction was simply, oh. And he said, that change from, oh no, to, oh, was 40 years of practice. It was beautiful. I loved it, and I've been using it. It's very much like Ajahn Chah has this similar teaching, although Edwards was living it in real time, where he said, Ajahn Chah said, when he was asked, what is this practice all about? And I was there. He probably said this a number of times, but I was there in Thailand visiting when this happened. And he said, it's like this cup. And he picked up his cup. He said, this cup was given to me as a gift, as this one was too. And it was made with a lot of love. And it holds my water well, and I really like it. But if I can see this cup as already broken, and then use it. This is what this practice is. So there's Edward in real time going from, oh no, to oh, he got the transmission. Take a sip of my chai here. So this quality of allowing and not fighting this sense of things being out of control, this sense of groundlessness, can be scary, or it can be the greatest sense of freedom. I've shared my friend Terry Patton's wisdom that he gave a week before he died, and he knew he was dying, and he was asked, and there's a recording of this beautiful Dharma talk, actually gave a series of four Dharma talks once he had gotten this diagnosis, terminal diagnosis, on mortality, his own mortality and human mortality, the society possible mortality. But this talk that he gave a week before he actually died, and somebody asked him, how are you working with this clear imminent reality? And is it hard? Are you angry? Are you fighting? And he says, I don't want to waste my time being in resistance to reality. Reality wins every time. We are ennobled by embracing reality, not fighting it, but embracing it. He had done a lot of practice and was quite a wonderful wisdom teacher in his own right. So to not resist reality, to just see it like it is, and to embrace it, as Terry said, to embrace it. This is freedom. I want to read to you a poem perhaps some of you are familiar with. It's a really powerful poem by Jennifer Wellwood about this. It's called The Dakini Speaks. She says, my friends, let's grow up. Let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Or if we truly haven't noticed, let's wake up and notice. Look, everything that can be lost will be lost. It's simple. How could we have missed it for so long? Let's grieve our losses fully, like ripe human beings. But please, let's not be so shocked by them. Let's not act so betrayed, as though life had broken her secret promise to us. Impermanence is life's only promise to us, and she keeps it with ruthless impeccability. To a child, she seems cruel, but she is only wild, and her compassion is exquisitely precise, brilliantly penetrating, luminous with truth. She strips away the unreal to show us the real. This is the true ride. Let's give ourselves to it. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. There isn't one anyway, and the cost is too high. We're not children anymore. The true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the wild dance of no hope. I get shivers as I'm doing right now, reading that last line. Let's dance the wild dance of no hope. It sounds such a cutting through line. let's dance the wild dance of no hope. Like, I like to hope for things. I often write my emails, hope you're doing well, you know, hope things turn out the way I'd like them to. But when you give up attachment to it and just have a vision and do your best to bring that vision about, that's different. And the wild dance of no hope, what she's speaking about, is the wild dance that, oh, everything's going to work out just the way you want, and you won't grow old, you won't get sick, you won't die, you won't experience loss. No. The Buddha said, think about those things every day. Not to depress yourself, but to just inoculate yourself with the truth so it's not such a shock. Like she says, let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Let's not act so betrayed. And every time we go through an experience where we see we're out of control, that we don't have control, I should say, and we make it through, it gives us confidence to see, oh, I survived. How about that? And if you can keep on using that experience that you're survived, that you've survived, the next time when you're feeling, I'm out of control here, there might be a little bit more confidence that you don't have to control things, that the game isn't to try to keep it all together. You know, that feeling of wanting to keep it all together, that's exhausting, trying to keep it all together. Oh, what happens if I let go of trying to keep it all together and can experience that groundlessness? And I'm gonna share, if I can pull it up, where is it? I wanna share something that I shared a couple of weeks ago, I think I did. And it's from Be Here Now, my Bible that kept me going for quite a while. And this is the page that really expresses so beautifully this idea of groundlessness and how to dance with it. I'm going to share my screen. Can you see the screen? So this is Shiva's dance, and Shiva in Hinduism is the god of transformation. I'm trying to get this out of the way. And you probably have seen this figure of Shiva, where he is he's called the destroyer god. There's Brahma, the creator god. There's Vishnu, the preserver god. And then there's Shiva, the transformation, the god of transformation. And people worship Shiva, the god of transformation. There he is, Shiva's dance of life. And I'll share this with you. Singing and dancing and insurance and savings accounts and job and responsibility, Shiva's dance of life. I'll move this up now. And he says so beautifully, do you do it from unk, or do you do it from ah? There's the choice. Do you surf through it all, or do you carry it around like a load? This page is my What? My primary principle in life, when I can remember it, do I do it from unk and fighting it and fighting change and fighting ways that things don't work out the way I want? Or can I dance through it? Do I do it from ah? It's not to say that I can always dance through it. This is what practice is all about. But to fully embrace impermanence and that groundlessness, we have a choice to realize, as the Buddha said, keep remembering things change. No matter how bad they are, they'll change. No matter how wonderful they are, they'll change. So be here for the ride. The Japanese have this notion, this principle called wabi-sabi, and it's about the poignancy of impermanence. The notion called wabi-sabi life is like the cherry blossom. It's because it's beautiful because of its impermanence, not in spite of it, more exquisite for the inevitability of loss. So I'd like to stop here and for a moment have you reflect just how you can practice playing around with this in your life. And I invite you, if you'd like to, you can close your eyes. You just can go inside and reflect. And think of something in your life, if you can, that you're trying to control or wish you could control. Just bring something to mind right now. Maybe it has to do with you or your body or whatever is going on inside. Maybe it has to do with others. Or maybe it has to do with some situation. Just something that either you try to control or wish you could control. Just bring it to mind. And hold this all with a lot of compassion as you do this. And now for a moment, open to the truth of impermanence and open to the fact that you can't control life. Just realizing that. And as you do, imagine what it would be like to keep that sense of okayness that can feel like a healthy groundlessness when you realize you're not going to splat, but that you can be here for the ride. You can surf through it. Ah, what's there for me to learn in this challenge? Or you can learn to let go of what is inevitably going to change and kiss the joy as it flies, as William Blake says. And just imagine more and more embodying this understanding and realize it's okay. And you don't have to fight and resist reality, because reality wins every time. Ah, what would it be like to embrace it and dance with it? And you might experiment this week with playing around with it. Whenever you get tight, trying to hold on, or saying, oh, life isn't fair right now. If I were running the universe, I'd do a better job. What if you just let go of all of that and see, oh, this is how things are. How can I meet it with grace and compassion and clarity and understanding? Okay, so there's some time if you'd like, if there's some questions or things come up from that. Sometimes I'd love to hear from people who don't usually speak. So if that's you, if you want to raise your hand, you can. In the reactions box, you can go to the bottom of your screen and hit the raise hand button. I'm just having on my screen people who have their camera on. But so any comments, anything that you want to share comes up from this? Hi, Carolyn. Hi,
I am muted.
Hi. Oh, hi. There you go. And we can have a dialogue. I can go like this. Where's Ad Spotlight? So here we both are. Hi, Carolyn.
Good. Hi. Hi, James. You know, this is the first time I've been on one of these, I want to call it programs, one of these Dharma talks and meditations. So thank you very much. And I'm on because I really love the topic. And, you know, I was in the Heavenly Messengers. Life-changing. And it was so wonderful. So thank you. I remember you told you told a lot of funny stories, but one of them I remember, and I'm not going to do it justice, but you did say that forgive me, I'm having trouble with remembering lots of words. But Shiva reminded me. So a Hindu, a Hindu guru that of your acquaintance, you were close to him. And he said to you, you know, you Buddhists take things so seriously. Don't you know there's no place to land? No place to land.
That was my non-dual teacher Pundaji, right over here. Meditation wears your mind out until you finally give up. And he would say, "No place to land. No place to land." Yeah. That's it. Thank you for reminding me of that beautiful teaching. And the Heavenly Messengers program, for those who never heard of it before, you know, the Heavenly Messengers are the three old age, sickness, and death that prompted the Buddha to leave the palace. And we had this 2-year program looking at old aging, sickness, death, loss. And for 2 years, we practiced just wearing that more and more. And there's a power to it. What did you get from that?
Oh, it opened my mind to things I had never ever thought of. And the teachings were so wonderful, and the teachers were so wonderful. Yeah. The bonding between almost 100 people was so tight, and I'm still together. So since what, 2013, I think that started in 2013 and ended in 2015.
Like beautiful.
I still have once a month we get together.
Oh wow, beautiful. Well, and what the real, besides the community, working with this for 2 years, practicing keeping in mind aging, illness, and death, after a while, like I was trying to convey, it becomes a lived understanding. And that's why the Buddha said, think about it all the time. So good to see you. So glad you're here. And
I'll tell you this, I live in a senior facility in Marin County. I've just put together a program for the residents on aging, illness, and death. We call it, you know, being mortal, speaking from the heart. And do you remember Doug Wallace?
Yeah, sure. Okay,
so Doug is our lead facilitator.
Beautiful. Well, there it is. Carry it on. Good to have you here.
Yeah. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Great. Okay. Suzanne, hi. Any there you go, come on
so I was thinking about this topic because I have a really hard time with it. My husband passed away last year, and so there is a huge uprootedness, which I think, thank you very much, which I think is this ungroundedness, or groundlessness, and I want to plant my roots. I mean, that's kind of like, that's where I'm finding my stability. And I'm also have been thinking a lot about for those who maybe had a more chaotic childhood, that you also have, it's a very uncomfortable place to be, you know, live in groundlessness. And then how do you transform the groundlessness to become now your security, or become your safety net?
Well, that the tricky part is looking for security. There's that Alan Watts book, The Wisdom of No Secure, The Wisdom of Insecurity. So
I think I'll get that.
that's what we're talking about. Yeah. I'm sorry for that, your loss.
Thank you.
And this is something everybody goes through.
Right, exactly. Everybody.
So that's one of the things first to see, instead of why me, this is part of the curriculum. Right. So now, that used to be, you have memories, and there's something about grieving fully so that your husband or our loved ones are living through us. And instead of, it takes a while, you can't hurry it, and you need community to do it as well, as Francis Weller, who's an expert on grieving, talks about, that you get adjusted to the new reality. And your husband would probably want you to enjoy your life, wouldn't he? And not spend the rest of your life grieving for your loss. So he becomes integrated in who you are, and more you get used to your new reality. Like when my dad died, and he died at 66, and my mom, for quite some time, I don't know how it could go on, she was grieving for a while. And then at some point, the last years of her life were just so rich and beautiful. And just like I say, you can't hurry it, but it's just seeing, now I have a new reality. How can I dance through this one? What will really make me come alive? as I'm grieving my loss? What things will bring me joy and bring me connection with life? So I wish you good journey on to discovering the new chapter of your life.
Yeah, I was very held by family, friends, the universe in general throughout the whole process. So I feel very blessed about that.
Beautiful. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, and I'll. One last one. Julia, hi. Let's see.
Yeah. Hi, James, and thank you very, very much.
I'm going to get
I have a question about Jennifer Wellwood's poem.
Yeah. Jennifer Wellwood. Yeah. Jennifer Wellwood. Yeah.
Yeah, Wellwood.
Yeah.
About not having hope.
Yeah, the wild dance of no hope.
Because in the last few years, I have become sick and quite disabled. My life is very constricted.
Very what? What is it?
Constricted.
Because of
what's happened to me.
Mm.
Now, I think that partly it's that my back is very bad and I can't walk or stand. Mm-hmm. And so I do have hope. And sometimes I think hope is what keeps me alive. Mm-hmm. And maybe tomorrow will be better. So I don't understand that line from her poem.
Well, it's not to say that you don't. It's not that you don't have, it's a little stark, that line. Yes, you can have hope and whatever there is, you know, that's possible, may it happen. It's just the attachment to it happening that creates the pain. So yes, you know, I have a hope for this coming year. I have a hope that humanity will figure out how to live in this world without killing each other or without destroying the planet. I have a vision that I think is very important to hold and to have so that I want to engage. But if life doesn't pass my test, and I'm waiting for it to, it's going to be very painful. So while I can have a vision and have hope, I'm not, the more I'm attached to it and seeing, is this going to work out or not? I'm missing out on my life right now. So you don't want to miss out on your life right now in some hope for the future, which may or may not come. Why not live your life fully as it is now while having that vision of possibility and doing whatever you can to support that, but not feeling that there's no point in going on if this is the way it is. So I wish you all the health that's possible for that body. And I wish you a kind of embracing reality, whatever it is, so that all of the goodness in you and all of the love in you and all of the sweet little joys that you can experience are still there to be experienced. So, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take good care. I'm glad you're here with us.
Oh, me too. Thank you.
Okay, it's about time to go. And I'll put myself in gallery too. And let's just take a few moments and dedicate the merit of our being here together. And here we are coming together in community. Just notice. And don't miss how fortunate we are. Somehow we found the Dharma, the Dharma has found us. We have like-minded friends. And we're here together, bringing out the best in each other, and may any good that's come from our time here together, may we deepen our practice in embracing reality and wisely responding to it, and may it ripple out and be of benefit to all beings everywhere and this beautiful planet that we share.